Now, let's leave all that aside because I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Eamon Shanahan, who is here in studio. Welcome.
How are you going?
Not a World Cup fan?
No, I didn't think so.
Listen, general queries this week, and again, a reminder to people, 083-300-3300 to text or WhatsApp, or indeed phone Brenda on 066-712-3666. We'll start with this one. I got my bloods done a few weeks ago. One of the tests I got done was celiac, which was fine. But my doctor told me I'm lactose intolerant, which I was never aware of until now. Yeah. I know I probably have to watch my diet, but there is lactose in everything, even medication. Yeah. So my question is, what am I now supposed to do diet-wise? Yeah. I'm a female in my late 60s.
Yeah, and one of the issues there is, and I know that it is a problem because a lot of our calcium intake comes in the form of dairy products, and therefore straight away running into a problem there. There are lactose-free milks. I remember there is an enzyme called lactase, which breaks down lactose into two other simple sugars. So lactose itself is a sugar. And as you said, quite right, it is in a lot of foods. Best thing to do, and ask your GP about this, is to refer you to our nutrition and dietetic services. Now, I know there is a bit of a wait for the nutrition and dietetic services, but I want to give a shout out for the local services, which apparently have the shortest waiting list in the country. All right.
The ones here in Kerry.
Yeah, where we're talking about, and I'm guessing and saying probably a month or two. Some parts of the country are talking about 5 years. You know, some mad stuff. Yeah. But to give credit where it's due, that there is a really good community service here. So talk to your GP and they'll refer you to the nutrition and dietetic services, and they will absolutely gladly advise you about the changes you can make to take lactose out of your diet, but same thing, giving you a balanced diet, which is really important.
And I didn't know there was lactose in some medications.
It's used as a filler.
Okay.
That's what it is. Lactose itself is a sugar. And as I said, I'm aware that it's in filler. And again, processed foods. I mean, if you go back to sort of the stuff you produce yourself, any food you prepare yourself, if you don't add dairy products, it is by definition going to be lactose free. So all the meats, all the vegetables, potatoes, you know, and yeah, because you'd have to be careful, I imagine, with some of the breads and things like that, because they may well be using milk in the making of them. But again, talk to nutrition dietitians and they'll be able to advise you as to what you can take.
Yeah, the good thing now, and you'd know that being celiac yourself, is that there's so much more foodstuffs available now.
Absolutely.
For people.
And the other bit is that restaurants and shops and so on are much more aware of the issues there are with the intolerances, food intolerances, and make allowances for that. So yes, there's a much better range of options available.
Yeah, which is great. Now, this is from Maura. Maura is in her 50s, suffering from plantar fasciitis in her left leg. The worst part is getting out of bed for a
first
step.
First thing in the morning.
Yeah, for step. I have this over 2 months. What is the best for this and how long can it last?
The difficulty with a plantar fasciitis is that it's a kind of an overuse injury. One of the miracles of the human anatomy is that our feet are extraordinary biomechanical things. And what I mean to say by that is that we've got this sheet of tissue that runs along the sole of our foot called the plantar fascia. It's attached to our heel at the back, at the front of the heel at the back, and to the back of our toes at the front, if you know what I mean. And every time we take a step and we put the weight down on our foot, what will happen is this sheet of tissue gets stretched. And then as we step forward and as we push off with our toe, that sheet of tissue snaps back and it gives us an extra push. And it allows us to be efficient at walking. And for people who do exercise regularly and who walk regularly, they can walk extraordinary distances without really wearing themselves out. And that's because of the fact that we've got this biomechanical wonder that is our foot. The problem is that for some individuals where that sheet of tissue is attached to the heel bone, to what we call the calcaneus, it can actually pull out a bit of the bone into a sharp spike, into a spur of bone, as we call it. And that's where the problem is. A lot of this has to do with offloading the pressure off the heel, and you'll be talking to podiatrists and physiotherapists, and you'll probably be using things like insoles or inserts or orthotics to offload the pressure. There are anti-inflammatory medications that can be used. It was a thing at one stage where you could inject a steroid into it, but that's a really uncomfortable and painful injection. What is sometimes resorted to are the same machines that they use to break up kidney stones, except you put the person's heel into the bath of water and it's subjected to these very powerful sound waves that break down this spore, and it that way relieve the problem. But if you don't take away the underlying cause of it, it's going to come back.
Yeah, this is it, exactly. Listener says, Deirdre, I have a question for the doctor. I'm a 68-year-old female, and for the last 3 months, I've had a bad throbbing pain in the top of my right thigh, just under my bottom. I've had all kinds of rubs, and I just finished a course of anti-inflammatory tablets. Yeah. Is there anything else I can do? I can't bend down because of the pain.
Yeah, my suspicion is that there is either an injury to one of the muscles around the hip joint, or that you may have bursitis. So bursae are sacs that are present throughout our body, and there is one of these literally on the bit where we sit on what we call the trochanteric bursa, and this can become inflamed. Probably the best thing to do at this stage is to have it your own GP, if it hasn't been done already, to get the area imaged, and the most appropriate imaging would probably be an MRI. Get an MRI of the hip, that'll show what the damage is, and then once you know what the damage is or what the problem is, then you can have the appropriate treatment after that.
Now we've another lady. This lady is 56 and she's on HRT. She said, I'm due a breast check mammogram soon. My breasts are tender at the moment and I'm dreading the scan.
Yeah.
Is there anything I can take to ease the pain beforehand?
There are two things I say about that. First and foremost, the proper thing would be to use any anti-inflammatory medication. There are a number of them that are available over the counter. So ibuprofen and mefenamic acid are two. Indeed, I think you can also get diclofenac. Now, I'm deliberately using the generic names because there are many brands, and the pharmacist will be able to advise you about that. One thing I'd say separately is that while it is really important that women do go for their breast check, and I've had women who certainly had breast cancer was detected at early stage by breast check. If you do have new or unusual symptoms in your breast, don't wait for breast check, because breast check is for women who have no symptoms. If a woman has a symptom, she would be referred by her own GP to a different pathway, because there's the so-called symptomatic breast service, which is separate from breast check. So if you are having new or unusual soreness, although I understand your concern about having the actual mammogram itself, if you have something new, you should be talking to a GP for referral separately to the symptomatic breast service.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's a wonderful service, breast check, but it's unfortunate that, and I've been in that situation myself, yeah, a lot of women get unnecessarily anxious and they're put through a lot of waiting if they get called back, because they do seem to call back an awful lot of women.
Yeah. Again, the mammography that's used is a screening tool, and to a certain extent, and in the parallel is with the colon cancer screening service. What these do is they look for early signs, but they're not diagnostic of themselves. And if there are changes noted in a woman's breast on mammography for a breast check, then you will be called for further investigations, either ultrasound or biopsy, and indeed physical examination, to try and work out whether there is something there or not.
Yeah. The problem is, though, that, you know, 9 times out of 10, if you're called back, it's nothing.
Nothing.
But you have 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
And that's the problem. And you're absolutely right.
Imagining the worst case scenario.
Absolutely right. And the difficulty, the worst of it, is the waiting. That's the problem.
Yeah. But there doesn't seem to be any way around it. I mean, you know, if you're a woman in that position who has this
You'd
weight.
You'd love to go straight through. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. But look, it is a wonderful service and we're lucky to have it, and they're very, very nice down
there.
They
are, to be fair.
They're great down in Cork. Now we've a 70-year-old man. He says, ask Eamon, my two ears are always itchy on the inside with small white flakes coming out when I scratch them.
Yeah, so basically a condition called otitis externa. So the anatomy of this is that cut a quarter inch, maybe a half inch of length of tubing that goes between our ears on the outside and the eardrum on the inside. This little circular tube called the external artery meatus, or just the ear canal. You can get an eczema in there. That's the problem. And it's essentially the same as an eczema anywhere else. So you get dry, itchy skin. in the first instance, you could use any form of lubrication. I've been saying for a long, long time, you can use ordinary common or garden domestic olive oil as a lubricant, and you can use it to lubricate the ears. If it continues to be a problem, if you call to your GP, what they'll do is they can get you fixed up for an anti-inflammatory, a steroid ear drop. That'll often be very effective at taking this problem away for you.
Now, we have a lady who had a cyst removed from her knee 2 months ago. She doesn't say how old she is. She says, there's been a swelling there ever since. I think it might be fluid. Should I get this checked out, or will it go away eventually?
I think the answer is do get it checked out. Again, unfortunately, when you say a cyst removed, unfortunately, that's a bit vague. I wouldn't be exactly sure. But my own sense is that if there is still a swelling there at this stage, somebody should have looked at it for you, if for no other reason except to put your mind at ease.
Okay. Now, Eamon, I think we might just take a break at this point and just let people know we have room for more questions. So if there's anybody out there who would like to get in touch and ask Eamon anything of a medical nature, 083 300 3300 to text or WhatsApp. You can also phone Brenda with your query on 066 712 3666. More medical matters after these.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, Amanda is listening to us in Kilgubnet, and she says she just wants to challenge you, Eamon, about not being able to digest lactose being a problem. She says she's 67. She had her bloods done recently and her calcium, etc., was all good, and she's been vegan for 40 years. And she says it's actually very easy to eat a balanced diet without dairy products.
And that's the point. You see, I suppose the point of thing is that for somebody who is newly diagnosed as being lactose intolerant, they're going to need advice as to how they do get their balanced diet. And that's why I'm suggesting you talk to nutritionists and dietitians. Of course, you can have a balanced diet. There are many things you can leave out of your diet and still have a very balanced diet, but you need the advice as to how to do it.
A listener has a 16-year-old daughter with constipation. She's waiting. She went to her doctor. He gave her a lot of medication, but she still can't go to the toilet. There is Crohn's and colitis in my family. Is there a test she could have done?
Yeah, there is. A thing called fecal calprotein, and it's a measure of inflammation in the bowel. But in truth, if there's ongoing bowel problems, especially with a history of inflammatory bowel disorders, you'll probably need to see a gastroenterologist. Now, age 16, you're at that age where things tick over. In terms of paediatric gastroenterology, I think we're looking at maybe one or two consultants in the country, or maybe more at this stage, but certainly at one stage it was very, very small. Whereas once you tick past 16, 17, 18, you move into the adult area, then there are many, many more gastroenterologists, and we have a couple of gastroenterologists here in County Kerry. Long story short is that if the bowel continues to be a problem, especially if there is an issue, you're going to need to talk to an appropriate specialist anyway, and your GP can arrange that for you.
A listener asks, Eamon, is there any alternative to nasal sprays and nasal saline washes for a person with asthma, COPD and hay fever? I've been put on different sprays but find no relief.
Yeah, there are two other preparations that could be used. Well, there's two other preparations that could be used. We want to try and avoid using steroid tablets because of the impact. The problem is that you could use them for a short term, for a couple of days, wouldn't have that much impact on the body. It might improve the nose, but of course, as soon as you stop taking the nose, problem will come back straight away. There is an older preparation called sodium chromoglygate. It's been known for 30 years, 40 years even, and it can be useful for people with hay fever. The other medication that can be used is a medication called montelukast. Montelukast has been around again for probably 25 or 30 years. I know when people say straight away, but there's a problem with montelukast. There is what they call a black box warning about it, that for some individuals, it may have an impact in terms of mood. The majority of people that I've prescribed it for over the years have never had any problems. And it can be a useful way of controlling this horrible symptom.
Now, this next question is from a 25-year-old male. He says, sometimes his toes start to feel like there's pins and needles when he's in bed at night. Now, I presume he means in his feet, yeah. He says, could this be due to wearing hiking boots all day?
Good question. you, as long as the hiking boots are properly fitted, in other words, that there's a good box in the front of them, in other words, that there's plenty of room for the toes to manoeuvre, that shouldn't be an issue. I suppose the only issue I have with wearing the hiking boots all the time is just to ensure that the feet don't get excessively sweaty, because if they do get sweaty, the skin will get macerated or it'll get crinkly, and that can cause problems as well. Typically, pins and needles would indicate something is interfering with the functioning of the nerve endings in the toes. It could be a circulation problem. It could be a problem directly with the nerves themselves. It is a symptom that warrants being followed up. And I think best thing to do is have a chat with your own GP about that.
Yeah, he's only 25.
Oh, yeah. So then definitely, young. Yeah, to be having that kind of crack, yeah.
Yeah. A texter says, I had a bad flu a couple of months ago. I got antibiotics and got better, but I still have a runny nose and I'm a bit phlegmy and I have a slight cough. Should I get checked again? I feel fine otherwise.
Yeah. The irony there is that if you did have an influenza or a flu, then the antibiotic wasn't going to make you better. You're going to get better anyway, because the influenza by definition is a viral infection. The likelihood is that there may be some form of post-infectious inflammatory disorder going on. In other words, inflammation rather than infection. Not infrequently, I'll find myself using topical steroids, either an inhaler or nasal spray with steroid in it, to help reduce inflammation to take away the symptoms, because it can take a while, as in weeks to months sometimes, for the inflammation in the areas to settle down after an infection.
Okay, now we've a kind of a confusing question from a Limerick listener who says that they don't want to go to hospital. The listener says, I don't want to go to hospital, I want to control it at home. Please give me advice. But you don't say what it is that you have that you want to control at home.
So
that Limerick listener will hopefully recognise themselves. So please let us know what exactly is it that you have
that you want to try and avoid going to hospital
for. Now, this next one is Mikey. He says, my blood results showed my sodium levels are low, 130
MOL. Yeah, 100 millimol, yeah.
Yeah. I am using plenty of salt. I'm a 64-year-old man, not on any medication.
Yeah. This is one of those situations where something falls outside or a bit outside the normal range. So let me explain what I mean by that. When the laboratories are determining what is the so-called normal range for any particular lab result, what they do is that they take the results of thousands of tests, and they average them out, and they get whatever the average or the mean of these various readings are. And then there's a statistical concept called standard deviations, and they go two standard deviations away from the so-called normal. Now, the thing is that just because somebody is more than two standard deviations, my understanding is that the lower end for the so-called normal range for sodium would be like 131 or 132 or something like that. You're just barely outside it. The thing about it is, you may actually be absolutely perfectly normal. It's just that the figure is outside what's the normal range. Low sodiums in my head would be sort of figures of 120. And that certainly is associated with issues. One of the problems, something we need to be very careful of, is that we can frighten the bejesus out of people by saying to them, oh, your figures are not normal, but they could be absolutely normal for you. One of the best things to do, I think, or the most appropriate things to do in this situation, is over a period of time, just recheck the sodium levels maybe a few times. And if you're remaining well in England yourself and your sodium levels are in or about, then there probably is nothing wrong with you at all.
That's a very good answer and a very honest answer. Eamon, can you give me advice, please, says this listener. I've lower back pain and glute pain on the left-hand side for the last 2 years.
Oh.
I have had injections in February, which weren't any help. I've done lots of physio, but no good either. Is there anything else I can do? I do exercise, but it aggravates it even more.
Yeah. And there are a few individuals who unfortunately have, you know, long-term pains. Now, the medical jargon for long-term pain is a chronic pain. And there's no doubt but that people who suffer from chronic pain, or as we call it, long-term pain as you would call it, there does appear to be a type of rewiring that goes on along the nerve tracks from the place that's painful through to the brain. And indeed, parts of the brain can get rewired as well too. The idea of the injections is to try to address that problem with the wiring, if you like. And I'm being very careful about what I say. In this kind of situation where people have this long-term pain, is really in the hands of our pain specialists who are all nearly all anaesthetists or anaesthesiologists by training, who have a very good knowledge of these pain pathways and is trying to apply the appropriate and correct treatment for that. One other thought that comes to mind is that what was the original problem? In other words, how did you end up damaging the back in the first place? Was there something else going on that might have triggered this, and has that something else been addressed as well?
Yeah, so there's more detail needed there. We've a male in his mid-50s. He says, will you ask Eamon, I've black spots in front of my eye. I went to my GP who thinks it could be floaters.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for an appointment with an eye specialist. Could Dr. Eamon talk a bit about floaters?
Yeah, I mean, they literally are what they say. So inside in the eyeball, we have a thing called the aqueous humor. It's a fluid that's produced continuously and it drains away gradually. Sometimes little bits of protein kind of flake off from the inside of the eye and they can float around. And then depending on which way the light comes into your eye, if it shines off one of these things, you can see this black thing in the eye. It is right and proper. Now, again, we're sorry that you're having to wait to be checked out. But the right and proper course of action is to get your eye examined by the eye specialist, because they have special instruments that will literally microscopically examine the inside of your eye. And hopefully they'll be able to say to you that this thing is an annoyance and a nuisance, but it's not dangerous.
Yeah, and it's more common than that person probably thinks.
Yeah.
A female in her 50s got insect bites in clusters. She has used antihistamines, but has a burning feeling from the bites. Is there anything else she could use?
Yeah, I've seen a few people, in fact, as late as yesterday, someone unfortunate lady who had this thing. You may have in the short term to use steroids in some shape or form, preferably in cream form or in ointment form, to try and take down the inflammation and swelling. Obviously lots of antihistamines. And occasionally the areas can get infected, and then you may need to back it up with an antibiotic as well. So it depends on the nature of the problem. Yeah, as I said, and with the weather and the warm weather and all the rest of the insects have gone mad, and I've certainly seen people with insect bites, and fairly nasty insect bites, in the last few days.
Yeah, is that weather related?
Yeah, of course it is.
Presume it is, yeah, absolutely. Listole caller had an operation in January on her bladder, but it's still coming down.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
Says. What can she do?
Yeah, so it sounds like she's got descent for bladder. The difficulty here is that the anatomy, the female anatomy, is that the back wall of the bladder is the front wall of the vagina, and if there is a prolapse, if the wall has collapsed, then it drags down the bladder. And the difficulty with that is that the two tubes that carry urine from the kidneys into the bladder actually come up into the bottom of the bladder. So if the bladder is falling down, you tend to drag these tubes as well. Unfortunately, you probably have to go back to your urologist or the gynecologist who looked after you. They will probably be looking at other mechanisms to try to hold the bladder up for you, hopefully that it won't have to require for the surgery. I know that there are newer, what they call pessaries, available. These are devices or soft things can be fitted inside the vagina that actually literally hold the bladder in place.
Lady in her mid-70s has discomfort in her left breast. No lump or anything she can feel. The discomfort comes and goes, and she's wondering, what could this be?
Get it checked out. I'm very twitchy about any new symptoms in a woman's breast. This is where you need a referral to the symptomatic breast service. That you can't feel anything is reassuring, but the fact that you have the ongoing pain is a problem.
She says discomfort rather than pain, though.
Well, any new symptom in the breast is something I just get very twitchy about, and she has what's called mastalgia. There are national guidelines which are readily accessible. Anybody can look them up and they'll tell you what the various options are in terms of the symptoms. You can literally stick in your symptoms into this, or look at your symptoms and see where do you fit. But long story short, you're as well off. You may end up getting a what's called a routine appointment, which might take out to 3 months, and that goes back to the issue we were talking about earlier on about the long delay, Deirdre. But to get the breast properly checked, just to make sure there's nothing else going on.
Yeah, for peace of mind anyway.
Absolutely.
Padraig is 37. He says he has phosphate in his blood that drops dangerously low on the very odd occasion.
Yeah. A highly specialist area. Now, insofar as I'm aware, this is related to some dysfunction of the kidneys. I stand up in a correction on that. You will need to talk to the appropriate specialist about that, and that would be a nephrologist who is a kidney specialist, and they'll advise you about that.
Okay. Now, I think, is this the lady from Limerick that is back again? Just bear with me.
Good. Hopefully.
Second. Is this her? Yes, it is her. She says she's from Limerick. She doesn't want to go into
hospital.
She says 5B. No, maybe that's...
I'll explain it here. Go on.
Yeah. I want to control it at home. And she goes back and says it's depression.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, fair enough, yeah. So, right, the unit she's probably talking about is an acute psychiatric unit. The vast majority of people who have mental health issues never go anywhere next or near a hospital. And to be fair, the services over the last 20 to 30 years have changed. Over the last 40 years have changed from the inpatient services, often in huge, big Victorian institutions, to a service that's now virtually 99% community-based. There are a variety of therapies, talking therapies, and then drug therapies that can be used to help treat people for depression in the vast majority of cases. Yes, people with depression may sometimes need to spend time in hospital, but it is exceptionally rare. The vast majority of people with depression will actually be dealt with in the community and won't have to go next to near a hospital.
Yeah, okay. So hopefully that gives a little bit of a consolation to her. A 70-year-old lady suffers from a condition in her joints all around. She says, I'm on, now it looks like biological once
a
week.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Could I get the GP to file for a disability form so I could park nearer?
Oh, yeah.
I'm using crutches at the moment.
Okay. So the fact that she's taking a biological agent, there are these group of drugs that are prescribed by the consultants, by the rheumatologists, for people with the so-called connective tissue disorders. And clearly, she has a significant disability. The parking discs, disabled parking discs, are administered by the Irish Wheelchair Association, and as far as I know, they're in Mayo. You can look them up. The criteria are pretty straightforward. If the individual cannot, without difficulty, walk more than 50 metres, then they would be entitled to apply for one of these. So you write to the Irish Wheelchair Association, they send you back the relevant form, there's a bit you need to fill up, there's a bit your GP needs to fill up, and then you send it off to the Irish Wheelchair Association. If all is okay, then they'll issue with the disc, or it's actually a card that you can pop in the car that you're travelling in, and that allows you to use the disabled parking spaces.
Just finally, the person, the lady with the bladder that had dropped
down, yeah.
We know what probably happens. The neighbour dropped in or the phone rang, but she didn't hear your answer.
Right,
she was wondering,
yeah,
would you repeat it?
Simply what I'm suggesting is that there are a number of physical methods that might be, instead of having to go back for further surgery, there are, one time they used to be these softish plastic rings, but now there are various gel things that can be used that literally hold the bladder in place. And again, to talk to your own GP about that, or go back to your gynaecologist or the urologist.
Okay, very good. Listen, we're going to leave it there,
Not
Eamon. We've gone a bit over time with that, but thank you so much for answering all those queries. We will put this up as a podcast when we get a moment, and you can listen back if you want to. And Eamon will be back with us next week.